Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to, hopefully enjoy. And today I'm getting to a book which I kind of finished a while ago and then I went back and re-listened to some of the audiobook to kind of pick up on stuff. But I've been thinking about this one for a while because I've been away at the European Juggling Convention, which is a big festival of, 6,000, 7,000 people. And I've been really busy doing stuff at that. But I'm back today, and I'm away on another work trip tomorrow. So I've only got a few minutes to talk about this this book. And the book is The Great Ordeal by R. Scott Bakker. And as you know from the previous two reviews or the previous two episodes, I reread by listening to the audiobooks for the first time, the two books in the series leading up to this, in the Aspect Emperor series. And so we had The Judging Eye and The White Luck Warrior, and now The Great Ordeal, book three in the trilogy of four. Because, of course, as always happens, or as so often seems to happen now, it's sort of like, oh, we can't finish off the story, we can't finish up the story in this last book, so we're splitting the last book into two. And this is not the end of the story, so the next one will be out, I don't know, in the future, I guess, sometime, called The Unholy Consult. And So this is kind of like ramping up towards the end of the book. Now, what I did when the first book in this series came out, I heard, hey, this doesn't really have an ending. It kind of just ends on a cliffhanger, so probably don't bother reading it. And then when the second book came out, I heard some reviews saying, no, this has got a proper ending, so now I'll read both of these together. This one, though, I thought, well, I'll just go into it. And in a way, I kind of wish I hadn't, because finished and I was just like, oh right, okay, now I have that feeling of like, right, there's more to this that I might not get for another few years, but then maybe I'm not going to be able to bother rereading this book in the future. So the whole kind of reading a book in a series is pretty difficult. And how to review a book in a series? Do I talk about what's come before? Do I spoil the previous series and all that kind of stuff? And I think in this one, because this is the first time I've reviewed this book, the previous two I've read and reviewed before, this time I'll go a little bit more wider and non-spoilers, and then at the very end I'll just mention some of the fun observations that that I have and some questions about the book, which might be a bit spoilerific, even if you'd not read the book, they wouldn't make any sense to you anyway, but I'll keep them to the end. So what we have is a book which continues on this journey with these different characters, and some of them are on a quest in this direction. There's like four different main stories carrying on. What I liked about the previous two books of this is that everyone seemed to be going somewhere and having a plan and knowing what they want to achieve. And in the Judging Eye and the White Luck Warrior, there is the Great Ordeal. What it's called, The Great Ordeal, is this big massive army going up into the north to defeat an ancient enemy which is arising. And you're like, well, those people are going in a direction, we know what they're doing. And there's some political stuff, and we follow along on one, this young king who's kind of like brought into that circle and things like that. And they're going somewhere. And then there's these other people, Achaemenion the Slog of Slogs. You've got that whole group of characters there, and they're going somewhere, and you're like, right, that they're going somewhere. And then there's another group of people which are going somewhere, and then there's a few other things which are just kind of happening, like in a palace, and someone's, well, you kind of know what they're aiming for and stuff like that. And what I liked about that is that you really felt like some forward progress in this, the same way as in the first trilogy, the Darkness That Comes Before, or the Prince of Nothing trilogy, with the Darkness That Comes Before. And you really feel like, okay, they're going somewhere, there's an army that's going somewhere, other people are doing stuff, but they're all aiming for somewhere. But then, in that first series, you get to the third book, and suddenly everyone seems to have achieved what they wanted to by the end of the second book, and then like two-thirds of that third book in that first trilogy are people just kind of sitting around. And a lot of the time there's these two main characters, Kellus and Achaemenion, and they're just like talking to each other, and they're like catching people up on, you know, backstory, and teaching each other magic, and teaching other stuff like that. And all of the forward motion, even though like physically they are still moving forward, but the actual driving force behind the book kind of just falls away. And at the end, there's a big battle and there's a showdown between two main characters. And you're like, okay, there was a little bit of the third in the last third of that book, which kind of picks up. And that's why, even though the rating of those first two books in the first trilogy were really high, it kind of fell apart at the in that third book. And it's exactly the same thing that's happened here with the Aspect Emperor trilogy. With pretty much the same characters doing the same things. Well, not the same things, but like in this one, they're all going somewhere and they're doing something. And at the end of the second book, like, for example, the character Akarmian, he arrives and his companion, traveling companion, who I've forgotten her name now. I should have made a list of some of these names. He arrives somewhere and you're like, right, he has got there and now he's going to get some answers. And in this book, they do come along and that storyline, he is gotten some of the answers, but almost immediately, like, okay, now we're in the right position and now we've got to go back to where we came from. And I'm like, okay, there's fun stuff happening here, but there's no forward drivingness of the story. And at this point, like, all the questions have been answered. We know what's happened now. We've got all of that. But it just kind of just goes, oh, well, these people are just going to sit around and talk, and this character is going to interact with that character, but not in any way that felt like the story was going forward. And there's another, at the end of the second book, there's this group of characters, Sawiel, who is this believer king, and a son and the daughter of Kellus, who are very important. They seem very important, and they go and they're going to this city with the non-men, which are kind of the ancient elf kind of race, although a little bit more technical than that. And they turn up at the start of the book, and then they're captured, I guess, and then it's just sort of like sitting around, like they just got long conversations. Sawiel, he puts on a helm where that kind of infuses him with the soul of this ancient non-man, and then it's just lots of talking and talking, and I was just like, I was zoning out, because sure, it's backstory, sure, but like there's nothing up until this point which makes me think that that has been interesting, or that has been a question that I wanted answering about the ancient non-men. I kind of felt like I got most of that from the previous two books, and now we're meeting a non-man who isn't mad, which is interesting, but not really that interesting, because it's kind of more interesting to hang out with the mad non-men rather than the non-mad non-men and stuff. And it just goes on, and I must admit, I just faded out of that part of the book. And then the Great Ordeal itself, they're like, okay, we're going up and we're battling against the Shrank, which are like the orcs, the Orokai in this book, and they're like, okay, we're running out of food, so what we're going to have to do is eat the Shrank. And which is, again, it could be very interesting, but it's sort of like, yeah, it's very grim, but it's not adding anything to the story except turning people, because as you eat the Shrank, you become more like them, but they're against them. And there's this one line that, like, even if they're like the Shrank and you're going to eat the Shrank, they just call it meat. We're going to battle the meat and we're going to eat the meat. And it said anyone could do anything, but those who were, after the battle, were caught rutting with the meat, were put to death. And you're like, oh, okay, so that's the level that we're getting to, and it's very grim. But I felt like we've had a lot of grim already, and sure, this is the next level of grim, but there's not a lot of going on with that story. And I guess it's even worse with the fourth storyline, where all the way through this book series has just been hanging around in a palace, and in this book, more hanging around in the palace. There's a little stuff going on, but again, we're not really any driving force in this book to move on with the story. Now, I'm thinking, of course, in the last book in this series, we're going to get all those resolutions and we're going to pick it up, but as a book, this was a real miss for me in terms of getting me through to the end of the book, kind of caring about what was happening. Despite lots of fun things happening in the book, they were kind of spread out among hours of audiobook, which I just really wasn't getting into. Let me open the Audible app here, and I'll try and work out what the timings are of this. It's The Great Ordeal. It doesn't actually say. Oh, this is Audible. So 11 hours in the first book, and what have we got here? So it's like a 20-hour audiobook, and that's just a lot to get through. Now, another part of this, I do think, is because the first time I've read all the other books, I've read them either as a paper book or as an ebook. I think all paper books, because I couldn't find these in my ebook back. What do you call it? The Kindle library or whatever it is. Back purchases. So I've read all these other books, which may be why a lot of like the talky stuff and people kind of just sitting around and talking, it's kind of easier to get through because I'm having to actually look at all the words and read all the words and process them. Whereas this, as an audiobook, again, I really struggled to get through parts of it. And I got to the end of the book and I was like, I must have been missing stuff. There's two storylines which I think I got everything that I needed to know, or everything that was in these books I kind of got from this audiobook. But there was these two storylines, which were the people who arrived in different places and then kind of started doing sitting around and talking a lot. The Sawwheel storyline and the Camion storyline. I just thought, I just didn't get this kind of stuff. So what I did is I went back and I listened to those chapters again, or most of those chapters again. And I must admit, when I went back and carried on with a Camion storyline, when he meets some people from Ishual, which is this land where the Dunyane come from, and Kellos is a Dunyane, and he meets up with people there as well, like that. When I re-listened to that, I thought, actually, I'm getting a lot from this. You know, I actually missed a lot of this the first time through. I kind of got the overall story, but a lot of the interactions I must have missed. But now this second listen through, I'm getting it. And I think it is because these books are quite kind of dense, and you can kind of miss three words or miss a sentence here, and it kind of just changes the entire outlook on the story. And a lot of it is from like a distant, like even though a lot of it is sort of like from close third person, and some is kind of omnipresent third person, but a lot of it is written from the point of view of someone who is only telling you part of the story, and there's a lot more story going on here, and there's a lot more things being referenced, but it's very obliquely, and if you don't pick up on them, there's massive story lines that you just don't get. For example, at one point there's this big battle going on, and then everyone is like, there's this, something happens, and there's this bright light, and everyone is falling, their skin are falling off, and some people are blinded, and some people are sick, and things like that. And you're just like, well, that's kind of like a nuclear bomb. And it was only when I went back and listened to the other section again, I was like, oh, the person who looks at it from this other side sees a mushroom cloud. And I'm like, okay, that's probably a nuclear bomb going off, because they talk about the techne, and they go to this big well, and they someone goes down into this well and finds this weapon. And I'm like, okay, that was like either nuclear bunker, or probably more to the point, like a... you know, one of those missile silos, you know, these intercontinental ballistic missile, and someone went down in there and got this bomb out and threw it into the sky with magic, and a combination of technology and magic to wipe out this army, or to help win this war. So there's some good stuff in there like that, and there's these, you know, references which you won't pick up on the first time through, maybe a second time reading. Or put it this way, if I'd have read it as a paper book, but it's not out in Europe until September and I wanted to get to it quicker, I think I'd have picked up on a lot more of these things a lot sooner, rather than on a second listen to through some of these chapters. So there was like three of the four story strands I was actually like, okay, I'm with this now. Like, I get everything that was happening in Momen down in the Imperial Palace, the great ordeal, this bigger army that's fighting up there. I'm getting everything that's going on there. I understand what Kellos is doing. I understand what Confess is, and all these, Proyas, whoever these different characters are and how they're interacting. I understand what the thrust of the story there is. Achaemenid and the people he meets along the way. Yeah, I'm getting all of that. But then the part in Ishtirabenth where Sawwheel goes up and meets the non-men and they have a conversation, I must have tried to get through like the last chapter of that storyline maybe 8 times, and I just couldn't do it. And I started listening to it, and it would go, and he would go down this thing and get into a boat, and then my brain would just freeze up, and I would just be like, and even when I was trying, really trying, I'd be on a bike and I'd have nothing to do. I just got a bike here, I've got a bike there, I've got 30 minutes to do this bike ride, and this chapter is like an hour and 15 minutes of audiobook long, and I'd put it on and I'd just fade out. My brain would just go, nope, I'm not listening to this. And I'd go around and rewind, go back to the last bookmark. And I'm like, right, I've got it up until then. And I'd do it, and it just wouldn't do it. And I'd sit in bed, and I'd be like, all I've got to do is do this. I'd fall asleep immediately. And then in the morning, I would get up, or later on when I'd get up, and I'd try and put it on and try and do this. Like when I was, going, and having a shave, I'd be like, right, now I'm going to do it. And every single time, my brain was just turning off. Now, I don't know if this is just me. I don't know if this is because I was trying to do it as an audiobook, and if I read it or something like that. But I've not really had an experience like this where I'm like, yeah, I must have missed something first time through. Of course, I didn't miss it. I must have just glazed, like I just phased it all out the first time through. And trying to go back and just not being able to do it. It was like, I felt like I was a stupid person because my brain just wasn't concentrating. And I don't think I've had that experience with an audiobook before, although maybe I did when I tried listening to the audiobook of, I think it was... what's the Roger Zelazny? Is it Roger Zelazny? What's the one with the gods and stuff like that? Off the top of my head, it's just completely gone from my head. Gods, the something gods. Anyway, that's is it Zelazny? Let's have a Lord of Light. That is Lord of Light. So when I first read Lord of Light, I was just like, wow, that is not getting through to me. But then when I tried it again and actually read it as a paper book, I gave it 4.5 stars here, as I see now on the episode list. 4.5 stars. So maybe that section, if I just read it rather than listen to it as an audiobook, it would actually, you know, get through my skull what is going on and I'd pick it up. But this time through, it really didn't at all. Which is a real pity. So that's kind of my approach to this book, that I just didn't grab me, or parts of it grabbed me, but a lot of it didn't. So now let's go through some of these notes that I made. First of all, it picks up right where it left off, so there was no cliffhanger. If you wanted to just read this trilogy so far, each book ends and the next one picks up straight away. Kind of talked about that. At the start, there was some stuff which I was thinking, is this metaphorical? And then it's like, oh no, this is actually happening, which I thought was kind of interesting when some of the relationships turn physical. And I'm like, okay, is man love now a thing? Okay, that's good. But is it rape or not rape? And again, the whole question of rape in these series is like, yes, there it is again. It's kind of interesting in a way that you would think, I don't know. It's really difficult, this series, because up until now, I thought in these first two books, oh, there's interesting stuff going along there, and is the authorial voice, like, is the author intending this to be intentionally misogynistic, and then the women come back and do more stuff against it? And in these first two books, I was like, oh, actually, this is going in an interesting direction with, you know, the much-criticized misogyny in R. Scott Bakker's work, which is often cited. And I was thinking that there could be a defense against this. But when I read this book, I'm like, no, this is actually pretty, pretty disgusting that all of the female characters are just turned into helpless ones. But then there's opportunities which so far wouldn't have been like, there's these things that could happen now, which would make me think, oh, there is actually room for women to do more stuff in these stories and women to do more stuff in these books. For example, the Dunyane, very mysterious. So far, we've only met two people, and one of them who was Dunyane, who is this kind of secret sect, which was like after this big, the first apocalypse, they were like, hey, we're going to keep this knowledge and all this kind of stuff, but we've got to keep it secret. So we're going to have this secret base, and we're going to breed the pretty much the Kwisatz Haderach, you know, that we're gonna breed a race of people who are kind of superpowered over thousands of generations, and they're gonna be there ready for when the second apocalypse happens. They're gonna be there to lead the world against the unholy consort and good. And that's what, you know, Kellos is in this book. And we met his in a previous books. We met his father, because his father went out in the world and then kind of sent a message back to say, hey, let's get my son out here as well. And then we meet in this book some others, because that's where Akemi has been going. He's been going to Ishuel, which is this, you know, this base of operations for the Dunyane, that they've been there for thousands of years, isolated from the rest of it. And when they get there, they discover some of the history of the place. And I thought it would be interesting. Oh, they're going to get there, and they're going to discover that, you know, I thought it might go down the Dune route, where all of the people who are doing this... is kind of like the women are in charge, and they're trying to make a male, although that's a bit weird when I think about it, like, why are all the women in charge trying to make this Kwisatz Haderach, who's going to be a man who takes over the universe? Why didn't they do all of their behind the scenes stuff to kind of make things better for women? Anyway, beside the point, I thought there could be any female character at all in the Dunyane, and this would be an opportunity to find one of them. But what we find is not that. In fact, we don't even just find no women and just men, we find out that women have been bred out of this society into the point that all they are baby-making machines called whale mothers. And whale mothers are just there to be impregnated and to create men. And I think, okay, this is presented as something evil. It's presented as something bad about these people. You know, the female characters that are there going, oh, this is horrific and things. I'm thinking, okay, it is horrific. But... like, I couldn't even work out why this misogyny existed to the point where, like, to just bring it down to biology, like, genetically that doesn't make sense. Like, if all of the men come out as these perfect human specimens who are just massively advanced, and all the women are just, they don't they're nothing. Like, they're, all they are just, you know, wombs which men put their seed into, and then babies come out 9 months later. It's like, well, what, like, what is being selected for? Like, how, like, it's just one of those things where I'm just like, well, this do, first of all, this doesn't even work. Second, it is horrific, and it's being presented as horrific. But this was a chance that there could have been something else. There could have been a place for women in the world anywhere, except as not as, not as, eh. It was just... It was disgusting, not on a way that a lot of this book is disgusting, where I was like, oh, you should be disgusted about this. And of course, I was disgusted about it. And the characters were meant to be disgusted about it. But again, there was... It seems to be like Asghar Bakr is just like... there was these easy setups for him to not come off as quite as misogynistic as he does. And then he does. And I'm just like, well, it's just a bit too much. It's just a bit too much in the end. What's my next note here? What have we got? What have you got? Yes, I do notice that sometimes Asghar Bakr, he gets into he has a word in a book, and he's like, oh, I'm just going to use this word over and over again. In this one, there was memorial. He had a memorial look, and marmorialist, which I guess marble like, so stone like, but it's marmorial, and it's just repeated over and over again. I think if I had an ebook copy, I'd do a search on that and see. And also, ingress. There's an ingress here, and there's an ingress there, and he went to the ingress, and there was this thing called an ingress. And in some points, there's a thing called an ingress, which isn't an ingress, but then there's other times ingresses. So, marmorial, there's lots of marmorial ingresses in this book, which get a bit overblown. Next up is. No, I think all of my other notes are now kind of spoilery notes. So what we get in this book is, like I say, kind of wrap up this non-spoiler section, is just like sections which I literally couldn't get through brain-wise, other sections which I kind of enjoyed, but overall just a pause in the story where we get a few revelations and we meet a few new characters or characters from the past and things like that. But nothing really felt like it happened except up in the north, a battle. Down in the south, maybe not a battle or something. And while I think about what happened in the previous books, well, actually, people were going from one place to the other place, but their characters were developing in a way which I was like, ah, right, I see what's going on here. And this book, nothing really felt like it was going on. Maybe it's because it's the third book in a trilogy of four, and actually it's the fourth, it's like a third story cut into two. But if that's the case, I think either the whole story needs to be shortened down and just be one book, or there needs to be a little bit... It needs to be rewritten in a way which is a bit better than this. Now, I understand that's why this book was so long in being produced and being put out, because it has been gone back and fiddled with to fit as one half of the story. But even when I got to the end, I was like, well, that whole section of the storyline, didn't really miss it. And if I didn't read that other one, didn't really miss it, because it doesn't feel like anything important is happening or anything important is being revealed or any forward motion is going on. So it's a real pity about that. So overall, this is my main complaint. If what you do have is lots of philosophical musings, which is actually something I kind of like about Asghar Bakr, that he has all these crazy ideas and he expresses these different things in different ways. A lot of those I really enjoy, like his ideas of the metaphysics of the world and bits and pieces. They make fun thought experiments. But the point is with the thought experiment is that it actually has to be, like, the idea of a thought experiment is it's something that you can grasp onto as a form of story. Like, okay, let's imagine a turtle and a hare. Or let's imagine, like a bow and arrow, and you shoot half the distance to the goal and then you walk to it. Like, those are only thought experiments because they bring out a story which you can identify with as a human being in our kind of like in our experience, and then you bring something out. What I don't like is when two people sit down and go, if we measure half the distance for there, it's no longer, it's just a math problem in that end. Or if it's a philosophical thought experiment, or, you know, metaphysical, all these different kind of things. If you're just saying what it is, it's no longer a thought experiment, and there's no story there at all. And I felt like all of the explorations of these things in the first two books of this series and the first two books of the first trilogy, it always felt like I was getting these ideas expressed through action, through character, through story, by conversations and interactions. Whereas in this book, and the third book of the first trilogy, these third books, it just feels like people talking to each other. There's an idea about what is a zero god and what is a no god, and sort of like saying, okay, everything is, every point of the universe is the center of its own, I don't even know the things, but anyway, this frame of reference is itself. If you measure from it, it's always the zero, but every point is its own zero. You know, interesting ideas, but it came down to kind of just one person thinking about it in his head, and what that led that person to do was kind of interesting, but it came to it just by thinking about it and just saying, this is this and this is this. So yeah, there's too much of like sitting around talking and not enough doing stuff, even though the stuff that is done is fine, I guess. So overall, I'm just going to give this book 2.5 stars because I think a book where there's sections which I literally can't listen to and can't get through to the end of without my brain rebelling and turning off, I don't think I can give it more than a 2.5, which means very average. So in this book, good stuff. In this book, very not good stuff as well. If that's where you're going, otherwise from now on, I'm going to go into some spoiler territory because there's some, I'm sure there's some fun things people who read this book might want to get in contact with. So otherwise, turn off now or email me at luke@juggler.net if you've got any book suggestions or anything like that. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge. Follow me on Instagram at Luke Burridge there. Follow me on YouTube. I'm at Luke Burridge there, I guess, too. And Goodreads as well. So become my friend on Goodreads and I can see what other people, what you think of The Great Ordeal. For example, here, Goodreads in general, 4.18 rating in Goodreads in general for The Great Ordeal by R. Scott Bakker. Now, of course, this always happens with later books in fantasy series, is that it's the people who've stuck with 5 books so far who are going to read the 6th. So it's kind of a self-selecting thing. But if this was someone's first... for someone who didn't like it, was reading this far, they'd still not like it. So, and friend reviews, 4.67 on average, but it's only because 3 people have reviewed it, and it's 2 5-stars and 1 4-star. But that's it. So turn off now if you don't want spoilers. So first of all, Nea turns up, who is from those first 3 books. Now, it's one of those things in these books where you go, well, his body was never discovered. He kind of disappeared at the end of the 3rd book, and I've always thought, this guy's not dead, because we don't see him die. There's a battle, and he goes off, and that's it, and things like that. So I think I'd have to reread the very end of that book again. I think I have it as an audiobook, so maybe I'll go back and listen. What was Nea, the breaker of horses and men? What did he do, like, at the end of that book? Now we know he went back to the Utamot and has united the tribes and is now going to get his own back on Kellos, because he and Echarmion were the only ones who really knew the truth about Kellos right from the start, which... cool. I really enjoyed him turning up again, and hopefully he's gonna do good at the end, because he's, I think, one of those characters, because he was the only one who was against Kellos from the start. And Kellos is obviously the good guy, but he's also the bad guy, but he's also the good guy. But really, he's a really bad guy. However you pronounce his name. And I was thinking, right, he's going to be kind of probably the Darth Vader. And I always thought at the end he was going to be the guy who kills Kellos. But now he's like, oh, and now I'm with the consult. So there's some interesting stuff. But I still think he's going to be the Darth Vader who throws the Emperor down. But I'm not sure if he's going to turn against Kellos like he did in the previous books, or he's wanting to do now, or if he's going to turn against the Unholy Consult, which that's an interesting question, what's going to go up there. What else have I got here? What I really liked, the survivor, who is the last Dunyain, and there's the and the child as well. So you've got these 2 people who are found in Ishual, and I really liked the survivor's brain, because he is like the Dunyain which has gone too far. And he is seeing so much into it. He's like, in the conversations in his own head, I actually quite liked. He's like, oh, this part of me is saying this, but this part of me is doing this. He's kind of like seen through. He's come before himself, different parts of his brain, like his left brain and his right brain, or different sections of his brain, are kind of talking among themselves about what is going on. And I felt with Kellos, we never had that. He's like, well, I am a whole being inside here, which I've never really understood about that. Like, but it's sort of like the fractions of a Dunyain discussing among themselves. And I do really enjoy his way when he takes the non-man Ash speed thing, and he's like, "I have seen the ultimate, whatever it is. I've seen the infinite, to infinity and beyond." And he goes beyond. Well, he dies. And I quite liked his story there as well. What I really liked as well is he has this collection of 100 stones. And they're these. I don't know if it's the magic stones or what. Where do these stones come from? I didn't pick up on that entirely. But there's that's paid off really well. That he gives one stone to his son, and at the end, that stone is the thing that lets them escape. And I was like, you know, that was actually a really fun setup and payoff with these 100 stones, which are impossibly accurate when thrown. What else have we got here? I quite like the battles in the north. Like I say, I that was a kind of spoilery thing as well. But now we have these mixtures of technology, the techne and the magic and the different styles of magic. Got the non-men magic and also the non-men technology. And for example, in the previous book, when Sauriel comes, they come and fly in and sort of like these whirling cartwheel things. And it's like, oh, they just flew in a helicopter. I'm like, if they got helicopters, why aren't they just flying around in helicopters all the time? But I do like the references. There is this thing there. I think it's this chariot in Jeremiah in the Bible where people say, oh, that's a UFO. It's just like, well, no, it's just chariots. Like if they were going to build a flying chariot, what would a flying chariot look like? It would look like a chariot. Whereas in this book, you're just like, okay, that is probably some kind of helicopter flying along there. Yeah, and the different references to these ancient technologies, which are seen as magic in the way, but they're like, oh, we don't even recognize the magic. For example, when the atom bomb goes off, nobody goes, oh, that was a massive magic explosion. They're just like, well, what was that? We didn't see it coming. It wasn't a thing. It was just as though, you know, a million voices were cried out at once and then were silenced, or so whatever the thing that you want to think about it, like to identify with this. It was sort of like, oh, weapons of mass destruction in a fantasy book, but weapons of mass destruction that we know now from our real world. That's going to be quite interesting. And what I really liked about that whole section is what happens, the aftermath, where all of these different people, all of these, the survivors, Kellis pretty much tells them, look, you might be alive now, but you're going to die. You know what to do. And he kind of gets them together and it's like, okay, all the blind people, we've got to bury these things because everyone is radioactive, and they put together everyone, and then they all just walk down to the sea and they're all like, yep, this is it. My guts are falling out. I'm vomiting my intestines, but I'm just going to walk out into the sea. And it's one of those things where you just go, wow, that is, it's an interesting, like so often in these fantasy books, when someone uses big magic, it's all very clean. And warfare isn't clean, and that's what all these books are about. There's all of this stuff takes energy, takes sacrifice in a way which, of course, in this book is kind of artificial because it's not a real battle, it's not a real war, it's not a real campaign. But the way that it's set up, these people are going, oh, right, okay, we have paid this sacrifice. We are dead. We are dead men walking. But let's pay off this bit of the story here. And then Kellis disappears and is like, right, you guys keep going. I'm off back to Momen. Whatever happens there, again, not so interested about what's happening at Momen. And what else have I got here as well? Actually, what's happened in Ish Terebinth, where all of the non-men have gone crazy. Now, I thought this was really great about a whole people who are immortal and what do they have to do to get through it. Of course, I referenced this in my reviews of the previous two books as well with the preacher. Is it the preacher? No, the cleric, whatever his name was. The non-men who was going along with the stone hags. Stone? I can't remember all the names. There's too many proper nouns in this book. I should have written more of these down. But I kind of enjoyed going, like, seeing what that would be. And here, where we actually get to spend a little bit of time with a non-mad non-man, sure, not as interesting as spending spending time with a mad non-man, but there is, all of that section until Sauriel puts on the helm and then goes down and I couldn't listen anymore. Maybe I should just give it another go. Maybe I'll do that. I'll just give it another go. Now I'm thinking about it. It's like, maybe I do want to find out what's happening there, but I just couldn't do it. My brain kept on turning off. But like up until my brain turned off, I was like, okay, there's something going on here. There's some interest, even though it's just people talking about stuff that's happened in the past. And it felt like a bit of a gimmick to go, we need you to communicate a lot about this and to have all this knowledge and we have this conversation, just put on this hat which gives you the memories of this other person from back in 1,000 years ago. I was like, well, that kind of technology could have been more interesting previously. I mean, it could have been more useful earlier on in this story to introduce it, you know, in the book six and a series of seven, it feels a bit convenient. So, there's some good stuff there too. Right, that's it. Juliana is home, and I'm heading off on a work trip, so we're going to organize for that. So that'll have to do for this episode. So, I said stuff before, so thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.